the Antoinette system and tune in to the Pearl White system at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 28th of February, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at Radio Arian today because we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us from rusjournal.org and the Orthodox Nationalist podcast. Matt, how are you doing today?
Let me get back to you on that. I'm not certain yet.
We're still having good weather here. It's still spring sunshine. It's pretty glorious, beautiful days we're having over here in Britain at the moment. How's life over there in America?
Well, you know, there's this big yellow thing in the sky. I haven't seen. I mean, I knew it was there to begin with, but I haven't seen it in so long. And it's casting its rays all over the place. It's like a different planet now. I haven't seen the sun in so long around here. They call it the sun. Do you have one of those over there?
We do have one. It's been absolutely beautiful, glorious sunshine that we've had over here for the last week or so. But I know it gets particularly cold over there where you are. Does it get as cold over there as it does in Russia? Tell me that.
No. We would be, if you were to draw a line straight across, we would be pretty much even with Ukraine. Russia would be even with Canada.
Right. I was just wondering, how close it was. So obviously you've got interests to Russia. I just wondered if, you were sort of comfortable in the same sort of climate that Russia has. And we're going to be talking about.
I am a cold weather guy. That is true. Yeah, I am a cold weather guy. I hate the heat. I despise the heat. And so Russia, North Dakota, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I thought that was so. We're going to be talking about Russia today. We're going to be talking about nuclear weapons and particularly the INF treaty that America has just pulled out from, and we're going to delve a little bit into that and find out what the mainstream media probably isn't telling us about it. And first off, I guess we'd better sort of explain what this INF treaty is. Signed by the United States and the USSR back in 1987, the INF treaty has been a cornerstone of European security for years. The agreement banned ground-based missiles with a range between 500 clicks and 5,500 clicks, plenty of which had been deployed by both sides in the Cold War at that time. Hundreds of such missiles, including those armed with nuclear warheads, were deployed across Europe by both the United States and the USSR at the time. This put the world on a brink of accidental annihilation, since the arrival time of such a missile amounted to between a mere 5 and 7 minutes and left virtually no time to verify a suspected launch before retaliating. So that's what the INF did away with, Matt. So why are they wanting to tear up this treaty? I mean, that sounds pretty sensible to me, not having nuclear weapons that, you could just use really quickly, just like that. So what's going on here?
Well, people don't realize just how many things can have nuclear devices attached to it. And there are nuclear landmines, there are nuclear artillery shells, even grenades you could shoot out of a rifle. So, but this treaty was always largely symbolic. The Russians never cared for it in the Soviet era because this was an area that the Soviets really dominated the U.S. But it does make a lot of sense. So the problem is the treaty, the treaty's been ripped up by the U.S. because, it's at war with Vladimir Putin. The U.S. treats Putin as an enemy. It did not treat the Soviet Union as an enemy. It may have treated it as a rival, but not an enemy. Two very different things. So this is the war with Putin is actually a Cold War, The war with the Soviet Union was just a rivalry that even two allies could have. The U.S. and the USSR traded so heavily, especially from the U.S. to Russia during the whole communist era. You can't really claim that they're enemies. And also in highly sensitive areas. So many of the Russian technicians were trained in this country. It's, you know, it's almost absurd. But that's gone. Because nationalism has always been the enemy. And that's where the issue lies now. The U.S., I mean, the simplest way to put it is that the U.S. wants to put the nuclear option back on the table again. It's highly doubtful the U.S. can win a ground war with Russia, especially with Chinese support, which they would have. And they want the option. They want it on the table. They want to be able to use it. And, you know, again, it's a Johnson's Law thing. I mean, no one really knows. How can we possibly verify if the Russians have, you know, every few months since 1987, they're accusing each other of violating the treaty. The U.S. has violated it 1,000 times. Russia and the USSR have violated it 1,000 times. What's so special about this time? And what's so special about it is, number one, I think what's really so special about it, the dominant element, is that they want to unify the liberal capitalist West around the threat of a nuclear holocaust from the evil Russians. And so that the Russians are planning on nuking the West. I know the Guardian just ran a report saying that Russian TV ran a map with nuclear targets, as if that this is something that the Soviets were planning a nuclear attack. They're already saying this now. They want nuclear warfare hype, so as to make, you know, put everyone on a war footing, put everyone in a crisis mode, and the regime can then get away whatever it wants. The other thing, of course, the Pentagon is asking for massive increases in funding because of this. So far, this is a godsend. You know, the ISIS scam, a few bucks, but this scam, this is, I mean, they just testified, I think just 2 days ago, to Congress that we need, I mean, $1 trillion more dollars to be able to catch up, because frankly, the Russians and the Chinese are far superior to the U.S. in this particular area. And this is what, and so everyone seems to gain, from the regime here. So those are the two big reasons that it's been torn up. And the U.S. has served notice that it's going to be out of the treaty, at 180 days. That was about a month ago. So a few months left.
Yeah, it just seems strange to me. I mean, it makes sense for you to say, well, America just doesn't have the capacity and the forces to go to war against Russia and China. So they would rather have nuclear facilities. That makes sense. But isn't Russia more competent with nuclear facilities? I mean, Putin keeps talking about these super weapons that they've got. At both his most recent speeches, he made mention of the weapons that they have, which would mean that it would be mutual annihilation. So what is the point in doing this if Russia's actually got better nuclear weapons anyway? So, you know, if Russia's got better ground forces, so America wants to use nuclear weapons, but Russia appears to have better nuclear weapons as well. So what is the point of this? Who do you think really does have better nuclear capabilities, Russia or America?
Well, the Russians do. Both the Russians and the Chinese now have the hypersonic missile traveling at 30 times the speed of sound. One of these things, which has now been deployed, or in the later stage, soon to be deployed, the missile that has the mini nuclear reactor in it that fuels it, which gives it an unlimited range. This is all coming from the scientific establishment in Peking in Moscow. Therefore, the U.S. needs short-range missiles in Poland and Romania. If you remember, just a couple of years ago, they put the shield up in those two countries, which the Russians and the Chinese said completely violated the treaty, which, of course, it did. So if anything, to be able to load up medium-range missiles in Poland and in Bulgaria and the Baltics and Georgia even, would be an answer to the fact that the Russian systems are far superior. Now, I don't know if the Pentagon is going to get their wish. I can't imagine it, but they're already beating these war drums now to a fever pitch, such that you have the Guardian coming really close to saying that the Russians are planning a nuclear winter against the British and the United States. So, if anything, to bring these short and medium range weapons to Central Europe, is a way to answer the fact that the Russians are better off in that respect. And the U.S. doesn't think that the Russians are going to listen to the treaty anyway. So this is just a symbolic action that justifies them putting these weapons everywhere.
As if the Russian state TV are going to be broadcasting their secret plans of what targets they're going to hit in America. I mean, that's pretty laughable. And I dare say the people that are actually living in the countries that have these weapons put in them, this shield that's around Russia, I expect they're not very pleased with that either. I mean, that just destabilizes the area. I was talking to somebody the other day that lives in a pre-Soviet country, and he was saying he would much prefer to see a union of the former Soviet states rather than NATO, rather than the EU. And it does seem a bit to me as if that's what the EU there is to prevent, because it would be great if we had a union of the former Soviet states, because they're all nationalist. They all don't want Muslims. They're all patriotic. I'd really like to see the Visegrad group expanding. But we've got a quote here of what's going on in America. This is a recent quote about the American military. The head of the U.S. Strategic Command cited new Russian hypersonic missiles and other weapons as reasons the U.S. must invest billions in nuclear modernization, and hinted at scrapping the last remaining arms control treaty with Moscow. Testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday, U.S. Air Force General John Hyten said that the new weapons systems unveiled by Russia last year were not covered by the new START arms control treaty, and that the U.S. might have difficulties contending with such weapons in the future. I get concerned 10 years and beyond that with torpedoes, with cruise missiles, with hypersonic, that it can go completely in the other direction, that we would have a difficulty, Hyten told the Senate. I have no problem saying I can defend the nation today, and I think the commander after me can, but I worry about the commander after the commander after the commander. I look at our nuclear capabilities, our triad, and our modernization program as the minimal essential capabilities required to defend this nation, the general told senators. Because we have to defend against the most existential threats, and Russia and China, and their capabilities are the most existential threat. Though government accountants have estimated that the overhaul might cost more than $1 trillion through the 2030s, and House Democrats are now saying this would be too expensive, Hyten insisted that the program was essential. Even at the highest rate, it'll still be roughly 6% of the overall defense budget. I think we can afford that security, he said. The US uses Russia as a pretext to withdraw from the agreement and keep its face, said Ivan Konilov, director of the Center for Strategic Environment think tank, adding that the Americans just do not need it. The treaty interferes with their policies and throws obstacles in the path of the American military-industrial complex, which is so cherished by President Donald Trump, he argued. The US does not want Russia and China to turn into the new centers of power, as it threatens Washington's global hegemony, which is already crumbling, Konovalov said. China, which currently possesses the largest arsenal of intermediate-range missiles, is Washington's other major target. The US seeks to stop Beijing's advancements in the South China Sea as it fears to lose control over the Asia-Pacific region, Viktor Murakovsky, editor-in-chief of the Fatherland's Arsenal Journal, told RT. So it sounds like America is getting pretty worried here, and they want to spend an absolute fortune on this, and that's the reason for it, for throwing this treaty out. And the Democrats are saying that that's not going to be quite enough, or they don't want to actually give that much money away. But $1 trillion, that's a lot of money, Matt.
Well, you know, when government accountants say $1 trillion, it's going to end up being $8 trillion over time, with cost overruns and corruption and interest, and, you know, loans, that's be loans floated and everything else. So this is a massive amount of money. It shouldn't really surprise anybody. We've been talking on this show about planes falling out of the sky, American military ships colliding into each other all the time, extremely low morale, especially in the nuclear area. That was a scandal about 5 years ago. The very low level of education and morale amongst those in charge of the nuclear arsenal in this country. was a huge scandal, which diversity, of course, plays a huge role in that. This is not a place to mess with social justice when you're dealing with nuclear weapons, where half of the U.S. Navy's air fleet can't fly, where they're struggling for spare parts despite a $1 trillion budget. It should surprise nobody that this is what they're going to come up with. You know, how do we build this budget, but at the same time create a war hysteria such that Americans will really fear? And the difference at this time, though, is that the U.S. really means it. There is no anti-war movement. If you remember the 1980s, there was a huge anti-nuke movement, which was always on the left, because they were preaching unilateral disarmament of the West against the Soviet Union. Well, now that Russia and China are firmly, you know, nationalist countries, national socialist countries, actually, in their policies, there will be no anti-war movement. The Democrats will put up symbolic resistance. I think they will not like the idea that this money is going to be taken from social services. They may fight over that, but you're not going to see any kind of concerted anti-war movement about this. There's not going to be massive protests like there were in Germany in 85, 86. You're not going to see this. Because now the enemy is the enemy of both the neolibs and the neocons. And that's going to be the big difference here. Now it's going to be an actual Cold War, not a mythical Cold War. And it should frighten the crap out of people. Absolutely should frighten. This is one of the most frightening news stories in a while. And I don't know if the press is gingerly dancing around this. It hasn't really made up its mind on how it wants to present it. So it's not quite front page yet, but it might be soon.
Well, there's General Hayton. He's backing up everything you say there, isn't he? He's saying that, look, we just can't cope with the hypersonic missiles and all the rest that Russia have got, and it's going to take a lot of money to compete with them. And we've actually got the US Nuclear Posture Review here as well. This document paints Russia's actual and upcoming nuclear capabilities in an alarming light, saying that Moscow has significant advantages in its nuclear weapons production capacity and in non-strategic nuclear forces over the US and its allies. Furthermore, Russia is developing at least two new intercontinental range systems, a hypersonic glide vehicle and a new intercontinental nuclear-armed, nuclear-powered undersea autonomous torpedo. Another claim prominently featured in the NPR is that Russia was violating the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty by deploying a ground-launched cruise missile system. The accusation dates back to July 2014, when unnamed US officials told the New York Times that Russia has deployed the outlawed RK-55 Relief, also known as SSCX-4 Slingshot missiles, at two sites and disguised it to look like the Iskander conventional missile launchers, but no verification for that was available. I mean, that's a little bit strange, isn't it? This gets announced through the New York Times by two unnamed US officials. There's no actual proof for this whatsoever, and this is being used as the excuse to ramp up all these nuclear weapons. I mean, what this really boils down to is the encroaching on Russia. I remember when the Iron Curtain fell and they said, well, you have your bit, we'll have our bit. So long as you don't put any weapons pointed at us, everything will be fine. And then America put all these weapons around Russia and used the excuse that they were going to be pointing at Iran, but they weren't, because they weren't circling Iran. They were circling Russia and pointing in at Moscow. And then you think, well, if you've got weapons pointing at Russia, obviously Russia are going to respond to that, and they're going to start developing their own weapons, which is what's happened here now. And Russia have now got the edge, and America is now going to try and outdo them. And it really is making things, you know, not as safe as they really could be. And it all just boils down to breaking deals that the West made with Russia after the Iron Curtain fell. At least that's how it looks to me, Matt, anyway.
Yeah, you know, it comes down to American capitalism. They have not been able to penetrate Russia. They can't control this oil and natural gas. You're talking about tens of trillions of dollars. And Putin is this standing humiliation to liberal democracy. Their entire system is endangered by this Russian-China alliance. And Iran, of course, you know, is a far bigger player than we often give credit for. When the when the missile shield, so-called, now, of course, these hypersonic weapons cannot be touched by that thing. Nothing can stop the, you know, 50 times the speed of sound. Nothing can stop those. But for everything else, the U.S. put the missile shield in a few countries in Central Europe and the Baltics. And they said in 2016, not 06, they said, oh, this is about Iran. You know, now Iran hadn't even developed weapons that could reach Europe, nor had they even given any indication they wanted to. So it was such an obvious, transparent lie. And everything that the U.S. does is to provoke Russia into action. Claiming that they break the treaty with this kind of a weapon, and they use all these technical specifications that no one's going to know anything about, so they can pretty much say anything. And actually, the treaty itself gets very technical with this stuff. If this came out of a submarine, it would be perfectly okay. It's the land-based ones that are the problem. So it gets very typical, but the American reader isn't going to understand this. So they make it real technical, and the point is to blame Russia for starting nuclear war, which is already happening, at least in the British press, and that this is the Russians' fault, and that they are so aggressive. You know, how many times have I asked, you know, where is this aggression? What have they done that's aggressive? And now they're going to say, oh, look, they're building these weapons that violate the treaty, and so nuclear winter is coming, and it's all Putin's fault. That Guardian article that I mentioned, and a few others, there's something very anti-Russian in the Guardian for some reason, even more than the American press, continues to hammer that this is more militaristic than normal for Putin. Like he's always constantly hammering his fist like Mussolini, threatening people. And of course, he never does. And the West does it all the time. So they're recreating reality here. But what could be more terrifying than a nuclear winter? I mean, it worked in the 80s. But the left was vehemently opposed to any kind of confrontation. Now, the left is not going to oppose this. It can't oppose this. They hate Putin as much as the neocons do. So now they could use the threat of nuclear war, and as terrifying as that is, and blame it on Putin and nationalism and American nationalists, because, you know, apparently Putin's connected with us somehow in their mind. So think of what they can do with this. You know, and that's really the point here. And that's why we should be really frightened at this. This is a deadly serious issue.
Well, it also, it does show, doesn't it, that the anti-war movement was just a cover for communism. Because now that this is ramping up again, they've got no interest in it, because it's Russia that rather than the Soviets that this is pointed at. I think it really does expose that. And I think the war in Syria really exposed that as well, that there was no great big anti-war movement saying don't go to war against Bashar al-Assad. And the reason why there wasn't one is because Assad is the enemy of Israel, according to their constitution. So of course the left aren't going to protest against going to war there. I mean, that was one of the things that really woke me up, was when all these troubles were happening. I was thinking, well, particularly in Libya, why isn't the left protesting against this? Why aren't they protesting against the attacking of Libya? You know, once you realize this stuff, you understand it, that all the anti-war movements, all the pacifist stuff, it's all just cover for communism. We've got another quote here. This is Russia's response to the American threat from last year. The Russian president accused the US of arrogance, saying that it thought that Russia would not be able to recover anytime soon after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and that its interests can simply be ignored. One particular move, the withdrawal by George W. Bush from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty in 2002, resulted in Russia being increasingly surrounded by American assets, which undermined the country's nuclear deterrence. In the end, if we did nothing, this would have rendered the Russian nuclear potential worthless, Putin said. They could simply intercept all of it. Without a nuclear deterrent, Russia would be exposed to US military pressure and would not be able to pursue a sovereign policy, Putin said. The president warned as early as in 2004 that Russia would not be sitting idle and that it would respond to this threat by developing new weapons systems. At every time Putin does announce that they have a new weapon system, he's always very, very careful to point out that that is in response to something that America has done, and that this is purely for defensive capabilities, just to ensure that America is not one up on them. I mean, he was always very careful to do that.
And you notice how he connects it with national independence. He says, we couldn't function as an independent country, as a sovereign state, unless we're able to check the U.S. in this important area. So this is, his policy here is very, very clear. In the American press, he's beating the drums for war, which is an exact quote, by the way.
All he's really doing is just ensuring Russia's sovereignty. They've got some pretty clever ways of doing it as well. We've got some details on the new missile systems here. The idea of a nuclear-powered projectile is hardly new. The US tried to develop one as part of Project Pluto in the early 1960s, but abandoned it since strategic missiles with chemical propellants proved to be a more viable alternative. But Russia has reportedly made a breakthrough in this technology, becoming the first nation to bring it to maturity. Putin also said that miniaturization of a nuclear reactor gave Russia another advanced weapon system in the form of a high-endurance underwater drone. The drone can dive really very deep and travel between continents at a speed that is several times higher than that of a submarine, a modern torpedo, or even a surface ship, he said. And then we've got this final bit here. The presence of American ABM sites in Europe and ABM-capable ships in the seas and oceans close to Russia's territory creates a powerful clandestine potential for delivering a surprise nuclear missile strike against Russia, Viktor Poznikir, deputy head of operations of the Russian General Staff, told a disarmament conference in Geneva, 28th of March, 2017. So that's the reason why they've got these drones. It is responding to the threat that is in the seas around Russia that could deliver a surprise strike at any moment. So they're criticizing them for these torpedoes, these drone things that he's got, but they're just a response to something that America has done.
I just want to remind everyone listening that it was 20 years ago that Russia was a third world backwater. That had no military chain of command, with a disintegrating country in every respect. And now, I mean, 20 years of Vladimir Putin, and this is what's being done. I mean, it's just that alone is extremely impressive. The U.S., you know, what Putin's comment was that, well, they figured Russia's, that no one could beat the U.S. Russia could never recover. You know, no one can rebuild the country that fast. So we could do as we please. And they got very, they get very complacent and not realizing what Russians really are and how a national socialist Eurasianist policy can rebuild the country real fast, as Hitler did in the 1930s, very quickly. And that now the U.S. is finally waking up to this. It doesn't have the resources to combat it. So this really is the response. And that explains the comments to the Pentagon, to Congress, wanting trillions of dollars, the war hysteria, and Putin's right. It comes straight down to Russian independence. Russian independence is the one thing that keeps globalization from completely dominating and controlling everything. And this is what it comes down to, and that's why it's such an important issue.
Well, it's the multipolar world, isn't it, that Putin refers to, that's held together by him having these defensive capabilities. Finally, we've got some more proof of the aggressive US stance here. The US anti-missile shield in Europe directly threatens Russia, a senior ranking Chinese general said at an international security meeting in Beijing. He added that US actions across the globe disrupt the balance of regional power and provoke regional instability. The US did not provide legally binding guarantees that the missile defense system they are deploying in Europe would not be aimed at Russia. But at the same time, it poses a real and direct threat to the Russian security. Major General Kai Jung, the vice head of the Central Military Commission Joint Staff Department's Warfare Bureau, said in a speech at the Jiangshan Forum.
Let me interrupt you right there. That is extremely impressive. This is, you don't hear this very often. The Chinese have now connected their interests with Russia. They do already have the SCO, so there's a military and economic treaty there anyway. Even though this is a couple of years old, he's saying that if it threatens Russia, it threatens us. And so any aggression against Russia is aggression against China. And so, So that's him talking this, and side by side with Russians, this is what's scaring the crap out of the U.S.
Yeah, he confirms that. He says China and Russia have similar positions about strategic anti-ballistic missile systems and oppose attempts by any nation or group of nations to create such systems unilaterally at the expense of strategic international security. The general said, speaking alongside the Chinese official, Russian Lieutenant General Viktor Poznikir said that US duplicity over the anti-missile shield is highlighted by the fact that the project continues despite a nuclear deal with Iran, which Washington claimed to be the main target for the European system. The Russian official added that in addition to undermining Russian and Chinese nuclear deterrence, the US system poses a potential threat to any nation pursuing space exploration. The system's anti-satellite capability is one of the reasons why the US rejects any treaties on banning weapons in space, Poznikir said. The actions of the US do not give credibility to their statements that Russian and Chinese missiles and satellites are not considered targets for their anti-missile systems. So they say, well, it's not going to be pointed at this, and then it is pointed at this, basically. And that's why they won't have treaties about weapons in space. It does all back up everything that you've been saying, Matt, doesn't it?
It does, and having the Chinese be very clear here, this thing is about shooting down satellites, which would include, of course, spy satellites and telecommunications and everything else, which in China is state-owned. This is about a lot more than missiles. This is about disrupting, communications, disrupting the things that everything that satellites do in communication between two countries. This is a deadly serial. Exactly what it's for. It gives them, and this is what invalidated the treaty. So the treaty was ripped by the U.S. when they installed the anti-missile shield, which is not much of a shield anymore, in 2016. So everything else that came after that is just symbolic. This is what invalidated the treaty.
So the treaty has never been fit for purpose in the first place. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Just before we finish, got some news just in here. Netanyahu's just been indicted for fraud, corruption, and bribery. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.